This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Wrestling Network fans, welcome back across the pond for episode number 24 of the Special Relations Podcast. Episode 24 signifies our second anniversary that we somehow managed to make, given that we are the most consistently inconsistent podcasts across the whole of the quad of pods. Thank you very much for joining us once again for this very special episode, and we have another excellent show planned out for your listening pleasure for the next couple of hours. As always, I never come alone. First up, we have a man who suffered so many British internet problems that he recently played the deadly game of relying on Royal Mail and almost ended up with no internet at all. And given that it's November, I bet you can't guess what topic he picked for tonight. He is the sole survivor, Ben Locke. Ben, good evening.
Good evening, Callum, and they said it wouldn't last. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the beginning of year three of the Special Relations. And as Callum alluded to, this is a very special occasion on the Special Relations because this is the last night of British internet. I am swapping internet providers as of tomorrow. So, this is totes and mosh.
Totes and mosh, and We'll be able to hear how emosh you are on the next pod that you're on, because you won't be cutting in and out.
Yeah, in fairness to the company I use, as you can probably tell at the moment, when it works perfectly fine. The key wording in that sentence is when it works.
Now, dare I ask, who it is you use just now?
The company I use right now may or may not have an association with Richard Branson.
Ah, right, okay.
And I may or may not be changing to a company that was maybe had an association with one Rupert Murdoch. That may or may not be happening.
Oh, right, okay. Excellent. We are currently associated with, just because I've recently started to encounter British internet problems, we are currently associated with Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
So that has been a bit of a nightmare in the last few months.
Before the two gentlemen I mentioned come after me, I'm well aware that they are not really associated anymore with those companies for legal reasons.
No, and other internet service providers are available in your region.
Absolutely.
Well, good luck with the transition, Ben. I hope it all goes well. I'm sure it will.
Well, that sounds a bit wrong, doesn't it?
Ben, we're all friends here.
We are.
And as always, we have a third man in the booth. This man is striving to survive after a week of imitating Forrest Gump on his way to work. He is at the top of his game at all times, but you know he wouldn't think twice of doing a Bad News Brown on his teammates if they aren't up to his lofty standards. He is the podcast legend, and we hope tonight isn't going to be his gravest challenge. He is Rory McNamara. Rory, good evening.
Good evening, everybody. And now's the time to tell you I only ran to and from work a couple of times this week, after all. Still more than Tom Hanks actually did whilst filming Forrest Gump, I betcha. All my own stunts, love. All my own stunts.
Still more than Tom Hanks did in Forrest Gump, and still more than I have ever run to work. So I think you're certainly winning the race to work, certainly.
But a victory nevertheless.
There you go. Small victories. And it's getting you good. Getting you a nice head start on the marathon, half marathon and marathon season next year, Ryan.
Very ahead of the game on that one. I haven't actually booked any up yet, but I'm sure I will. I'll do it tomorrow.
A man of your caliber, Rory. You can get with just say, don't you know who I am, and they'll get you on any entry list.
I don't know about you, Callum, but I just love the casual way Roy says, oh, yeah, I'll just book a marathon tomorrow or a half marathon. Whatevs.
Next one in February.
I think for me to get in shape for a marathon, I'm going to need to go do the London Marathon in 2025.
It's a goal.
That's achievable. That's achievable.
I don't think it is. Anyway, enough of my severe lack of fitness. I'll pass you over now to the Booker man, Ben Locke. Given that it's November, I wonder what the first topic of conversation is going to be, Ben. But I'll pass it over anyway. Ben, what do we have in store?
So tonight, I want to spend a bit of time, as it's our second anniversary, and God damn it, it's my podcast and all that. I want to talk a bit about like where I am as a wrestling fan, and obviously you guys are where you are, but I'm at a place that I honestly never thought I would get to, and we'll get to that. And tied into that, we've got the 10 minute rule. We'll be back, and it'll be talking all about my favorite pay per view of the year, the Survivor Series. Callum will be leading that because he's gonna come up with a way that's gonna make it entertaining, and God love you, Callum, for that.
I'll try my best.
And then in the second part of the show, we've got our interview review. And if you remember from last month, we said we were going to be watching and talking about the Bret and Shawn Greatest Rivalries interview. And we'll be doing that in the second part.
So, as you can hear, I hopefully you'll agree that we it was not hyperbole when we said that we've got an excellent show planned, because I think it's going to be a fun one, especially for my 10-minute rule and seeing what the guys think of it. It came off the back of a couple of long commutes this week, and it gives you some real time to contemplate the important things in life, like the Survivor Series pay per view every year. So I think, given what Ben said was going to be our first topic, I think it's only fair that we should pass it right over to Rory for his thoughts on the current state of WWE. Not only kidding, Ben. I feel like you might have something to get off your chest.
I think from what I heard from you two, though, I think we might be singing off pretty damn similar hymn sheets. So you know, I wouldn't mind. Okay, so I'm going to start this by going back way back. And if I get a bit emotional and a bit angry, I apologise in advance, but I'll try not to. I started watching pro wrestling in May of 1990. The first thing I ever watched was WrestleMania 6 on VHS. So I've been a wrestling fan for 31 years, and I love pro wrestling. And I do. I'm 40 years old now, and I love it. And I do a podcast on bad wrestling and bad wrestling shows here on Place to Be, and I can appreciate the bad and I can appreciate the good. The reason I mentioned what I started watching is, you know, I was there for Doink and Dink. I was there for the whole Russo thing and the Kennel from Hell. I was there for The Miz, The Real World shit. I was there for Tommy Dreamer, you know, chewing tobacco. I was there for the whole Kiss My Ass. I was there for everything of all that. So, you know, bad wrestling is what it is. I am at a point now with current WWE wrestling where I just don't care anymore. You can put up with good, you can watch good wrestling, you can watch bad wrestling, but when you get to the point where you just don't care, something has gone badly wrong somewhere. We are recording this on Thursday, the 25th of November. So let me just say to all of our American friends, happy Thanksgiving. Hope you had a lovely, lovely time.
Yes, and happy Thanksgiving.
And the reason I mentioned the date is because the Sunday previous, the WWE put a pay-per-view on called Survivor Series. Now, this has been going on since 1987, so this has been going on a damn long time. Now, I have my opinions of it. Those opinions are well known. But guess what? I would still watch the show because I love pro wrestling. I knew I was going to be at work on Monday morning, so I didn't watch it live. That's okay. I've not watched shows live before. I watched them later in the week. For this show, I didn't even do that, and I knew I wasn't even going to do that. Now, here in the UK, we miss pay-per-views like the In Your House, the early In Your Houses, because Sky just didn't have that deal. So I don't miss pay-per-views lightly, but on this occasion, I did. And why didn't I? Why did I miss it? Because I just don't care. And I kind of knew on Monday morning, I was thinking about it over the weekend, and I thought, well, if this show's really good, I'm going to look like, you know, I'm going to have egg on my face. There's a pun there. We'll get to that in a minute. And, you know, people could tell me I'm wrong. People could happily tell me I'm wrong. But having seen the results, there was nothing there that I want to go back and watch. When the main talking point of the show is a fucking gold egg, there is an even bigger problem. You fine, take The Rock's money, take Ryan Reynolds' money. That's fine. I've got no problem with that. But let's not make it an entire selling, you know, an entire selling point of a show. You know, and the other thing we've moaned about as fans, and we've said it quite a few times over the last 2 years. The company is the star now, not the wrestlers. It's the company. It's the name. It's the WWE name. The wrestlers, God love them, are basically lemmings and sheep at this stage. And you look at the results from Survivor Series, and Raw won every single match except for the last match between Roman Reigns. And you might, some people out there will think that's a good thing. I think it's a fucking awful thing, and I'll tell you for why. That is basically saying that all your SmackDown quote-unquote superstars aren't even at the level below Roman Reigns. They aren't even there. They're not even in the conversation. So, you know, everybody's like, oh, who's going to beat Roman? We're going to have John Cena review. We're going to have Brock Lesnar review. And then we're going to get this match between Roman Reigns and The Rock at WrestleMania. Great. But then what? Then what happens? You know, we don't know. They can only book in the women's division. They can only seemingly to me book one character, which is basically women being bitches. And we mentioned it with Becky and Charlotte last episode. That's the only character they can do. That's the only character trait they can do. Or they try and make him into a G-Shucks Cena wannabe. That's it. They've got two characters. The tag division. Again, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but the Usos. Are they entertaining? What's the last entertaining Uso thing? I can't even name it. And they're the best tag team they've got. And I don't just say this. I don't just say this as, you know, I know I get accused of being an AEW mark, and I just don't say it like that now. Because they're not the only alternative that's out there. You've got Impact that's doing great things at the moment. You know, me and Callum, you know, we throw little jibes in about Josh Alexander. He's in the best wrestler of the year conversation. And he's not just a passing name. He's in it. He's there. And if you're an old school fan, as Callum is, as Scott Criscolo is, as Dr. G, Sean Kidd, you've got the NWA. These wrestlers now, how can I put it? The WWE was always the be-all and the end-all. That is no longer the case. There are so many options out there. You know, these people who have been released from company because of budget cuts. This might, from a company, by the way, that have been making record profits, but they're making budget cuts. So, okay. you know, they're going to get work. They're going to find the work. There's places out there. You know, the three companies I've mentioned, plus the Indies, plus Japan. There's tons of options out there. That, you know, people being released is one thing. When you have people voluntarily leaving the WWE to go, you know, somewhere else, and they're not being paid more than what the WWE paid, and they're going there for other reasons, and I'll get into that. So I'm talking like, you know, your Big Shows, your Mark Henry's, Christian, Adam Cole, Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. They've all moved on. Basically, you know, wrestlers are almost the same now as sort of film stars and actors. Actors go to the big screen and do all that and, you know, TV, but they'll go down to do smaller plays and you know, things that not so many people are going to see because they want to be creative. They don't want to be a sheep and a lemming pigeonholed into one thing. We're going to get a situation in a couple of weeks with Johnny Gargano where, you know, chances are he's going to be leaving. And yes, it's scary. Of course it is. The man's about to have a cat kid. It's going to be scary. But again, there's so many options now available to people that, you know, WWE isn't the be-all and end-all of everything. And, you know, I haven't even mentioned NXT, what they have done to NXT. They have taken something that is, you know, 18 months ago was my favorite, you know, wrestling brand company in the world and just changed it totally. If we're talking about things got ruined by the pandemic, NXT is right at the top of that list. They basically turned it into primetime wrestling 1991 with that crowd. That's what it's turned into. I feel like I've ranted on a bit. But I'm gonna use an analogy, and much like most of the analogies we use on this show, I'm gonna use football/soccer. And gentlemen, indulge me just for 1 minute. Swap the words wrestling and football, and then swap the words WWE with the team I'm about to use, and you'll see where I'm going. Manchester United are the biggest football team in this country. They have the biggest crowds. They have the biggest reach. They are arguably one of the biggest teams in the world, but they are not the best team in Britain, not by a long shot. They're not even in the top four or five at the moment. They've sacked a manager this week because of results and, you know, recruitment and all that. I don't know, you know, to top of the hand, if you'll note this, they haven't won a league title in 8 years. They haven't won a trophy of any kind in 4 years. And Manchester United and the WWE are very comparable. That they are where you want to be. They're where the money is. But are you necessarily going to be fulfilled when you get there? And the chances are you probably aren't. And in closing, I'm going to let go ahead and talk because I've gone on for quite a bit here. I love pro wrestling. I love pro wrestling. AEW, I'll admit, I'm not an AEW mark. If they do something shit, I will say it. On the last episode of Dynamite that happened last night as we're recording this, QT Marshall, Billy Gunn, and Cody Rhodes were in quite prominent roles. So they don't do everything good, guys, all right? So I'm not going to sit here and say that. But what they have done is they've rejuvenated my passion and my love and my interest. And as a result, I can sit here and say, I don't love the WWE anymore. I really don't. I love pro wrestling, but I don't love WWE. Not the modern version, anyway. And I will pass it over to the boys to talk, because I might have a little cry.
I think we're all going to after that. My goodness me.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you were expecting, but...
that sounded like a nomination for our tune.
There's the outro music sorted.
Yeah, that's nice and easy. That's not going to keep me up all night now, is it? Thank you, Mr. Bates. Right, yeah, well, God, where can I pick from on that one, Ben? You're giving me so much to choose from. Yeah, I'll start with a little history lesson of my own. I've told it many, many times. I've been watching pro wrestling now for 25 years. Started watching in anger shortly after WrestleMania 12. And you alighted on a great point there, Ben, where, especially at that time, mid-90s for me, you know, the internet was just that film with Sandra Bullock that seemed to be on Sky Movies all the freaking time, taunting the 99.99% of the people in the world who didn't have internet access, probably more than that actually. So if you wanted to watch wrestling at the time, you were stuck with what you were given, and that was Raw on Friday nights here in the UK. You get our version of the syndicated shows. And if you flipped over to TNT, you would get Nitro on a 1 week delay, also on a Friday night. And that was pretty much it. You would get the A-level pay-per-views, 3, you know, we were still a year away from getting it in your houses at that point, would only get the jump ahead. They would only get the WCW pay-per-views on a 6-week delay if you dived into the murky world of the German channels. Not what I'm sure any of us did on a Friday or Saturday night anyway. Oh, no. So that was it. And your choices were, certainly my choices were, extremely limited. And that probably applies worldwide as well. Unless you were a tape trader, then if somebody came up to me and said, hey, what about Misawa Kawada, mate? Then, you know, what else could you give but a Jerry Lawler-esque response? And thank goodness we moved on a long way from then as well. I just find it's extraordinary that 25 years ago isn't that long ago when you think about it, but it might as well have been several eons. And there are now so many alternatives, you rightly say, if you are a pro wrestling fan. You could spend all your time, and this is no criticism because I do it most of the time anyway, just living in the past. I mean, one thing I do think we need to praise for WWE for is the network. Yes, it has its issues, but you could spend hours upon days upon weeks upon months just diving into the old stuff, quote unquote, and not even scratch the surface. And you could be as happy as the proverbial Larry and shit, you know? So you've got all of these things now available to you at the drop of a hat. And that's before every single promotion in the entire world, and no matter what your personal wrestling tastes are, there is something out there that you can acquire just like that that will satisfy your needs. And I think the WWE's key problem here, and it's a criticism I have to level at Vince McMahon, which is a tough one for me to say because there have been occasions in the past where he has done this, 1984, 1997, spring most readily to mind, but he hasn't moved with the times. A WWE show from November 2021, personnel aside, I would say indistinguishable from a WWE show from November 2003. In that respect, 18 years is an extraordinarily long time. We talked about this when we mentioned the demise of ROH last month. The changes that have been undergone in that 20-year, pun intended, period, they're astronomical. We would need a 5-hour show just to describe all of them. As far as the second letter of WWE ever meant anything, they haven't tried to make it mean any more. They are, as I said again last month, a branded media content company. And as all the zeros will tell you, an extremely successful one. So what their supposed modus operandi is, they're checking all the boxes, and you can hear the clink, clink, clang of the till registers week upon day upon month. You know, so what they're doing is a success. But just because they have undoubtedly the finest roster of in-ring talent they've ever had, and I'd say that's probably about 5 or 6 years standing and still going on to this day, no question about it. Just look at the names there, brimming with talent. 4-star plus, if that's your thing, out every possible shoot. But this is the big issue. Vince McMahon isn't especially bothered with that. He is rather fortunate, from those of us who do watch WWE for wrestling, and it is there if you want it. It can be. But he's just very, very fortunate that he's got guys who can get him out of that hole. If roster-wise, we were talking something like, God forbid, 1995, and the methods of presentation were the same, then I don't even think we'd be having a present tense conversation about the company. But he is being kept afloat by something he has very little interest in. I mean, whatever you think about the Survivor Series concept, and we'll get onto it in a bit, and spoiler alert, I'm going to agree with you completely. Just look at the names who were on that Survivor Series pay-per-view 4 days ago. Front to back, just quality in-ring wrestlers. Not in-ring performers, in-ring wrestlers. And then you mentioned it yourself 20 minutes ago. What's the one thing we're talking about coming out of it? Exactly. But WWE will always put the E first. They always have. And that's not a bad thing. It really, really isn't. We don't remember random mid-card matches from 1998, but we sure as hell remember Austin coming out on the Zamboni. And there are hundreds of other possible examples. They did that better than anybody else at the time. No question. I said so in Timeline on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. Some of the finest entertainment, not just sports entertainment, entertainment you could find anywhere. And I will gladly stand by that. But Vince McMahon, as far as he, again, I want to repeat this, make this clear, because we know what we're talking about. He said it in 1984, saying it again now. The second W, easily the least important one of the two. But sight has been lost of it at the one time, given the talent at their supposed disposal. It should be as close as it possibly can be to the prime mover. And this, I think, is why a lot of people are moving on. There's always been stupid stuff in the WWF, WWE, more so than good, even at his very best days. As I mentioned, the Attitude Era, 90% of that, I never, ever want to consider again. No, we are a very different world of people now than we were in 98 to 2000, and all the better for it. But even though there was a lot of bad, we remember the good. Now, though, with everything that is so micromanaged, so predetermined, and I use that term advisedly, and most importantly, fewer and fewer people who have been involved in the wrestling business doing stuff backstage. No Pat Patterson anymore. No Gerald Briscoe. No Rob Remus doing anything of any real notes. No Jack Lanza. They all have their pros and cons, but they were there for many, many years, and they provided a wrestling background to Vince McMahon's idea of sports entertainment. They are not there anymore. And if the wrestlers weren't, I don't think I would be there at all now.
Can I just cut in quick before Callum gets it? Callum has the floor. Just so I can say a couple of things just while Rory's, just from what Rory's just said, just before I forget. One, and like I say, when I'm talking about modern WWE, like as in the present day, if they offered an option on the network where you could just pay for the archive footage, I'd be there in a heartbeat. I'd be, you know, this. I'd be picking and choosing the pay-per-views, and I'm always going to be part of the problem, I think, because I'm always going to have the network. There's never going to be a situation where I don't think I will never have it, because it's, you know, the 10 quid a month. Second of all, and Rory, you know, very eloquently put it, you know, star ratings and having the best match on the show isn't the be-all and end-all for me. You can have a great match, but if I don't remember it at 10 minutes later, what's the point? You've got to have, you know, you have to have sizzle with the steak. And at the moment, it's a pretty good steak, but unfortunately, there ain't no sizzle there.
Just to come out, I think that's it, because, for example, I've mentioned her name, Becky, and I'm going to have to mention her name, Charlotte. You've already done it, so I'm going to mention it.
I think at this point you're pretty safe, mate.
Listen to last month for more sagas on that one. We're going to have to do it again one day. I gave up midway through. But I watched that match purely and solely because the reviews it got were so wide-ranging. Some people saying it was one of the matches of the year. Like Scott Keith was down in the mid-2s. Again, star ratings are star ratings. As it was, I was in the middle, thought it was round about. It was good to very good, but not great. But that's by the way. It was still, if you compare that as an opening pay-per-view match to something from, say, I'll use it again, the Attitude Era, it's absolute night and day. The quality of even a merely decent to very good match between Becky and Charlotte blows away most things you would find on any pay-per-view from 98 to 2000, give or take the main events. But I tell you what, I would much rather dig out one of those groups of matches again. I'll just gladly sit down and rewatch a pay-per-view from 98 to 2000, warts and all, than ever watch that match again. There's no disrespect to those two competitors. Well, maybe disrespect to one of them. That's for another reason. No extra disrespect to any of those competitors. But everything is much of a muchness. And even when it's good, and it was good, there's no reason to remember or care about it. And that's the key problem. And it's one they don't want to solve. Because they don't need to. They don't need to.
Yeah, they're making the money.
Callum.
All yours, Cal.
Thank you, gentlemen. Very heavy hitting start to the show, but not completely unjustified, or not unjustified at all. Unlike my two colleagues, I have only ever watched professional wrestling predominantly where the WWE has been the undisputed number one. Wasn't aware of Ring of Honor or TNA until 2004-2005, and that was only in Power Slam magazine, so you get very little on that. So it's been, I didn't know, I wasn't living the Monday Night Wars or anything like that. My formative years as a wrestling fan would, my weekends, so in 2001-2002 I'd been about 10-11 years old. My weekends revolved around two things, football and professional wrestling. I would wake up on a Saturday morning, I would go and play for my seven-a-side team. I would then come back, and if we started early enough, I'd be home for 10 o'clock, and SmackDown would start on Sky One. There was always the Friday nights where my dad, God love him, would stay up with me to watch Raw on. He would fall asleep on a Friday night. I now know that feeling of wanting just to go at your bed early doors on a Friday after working all week. He would stay up and watch Raw with me until he fell asleep, and then I would just end up watching it by myself. And then after that, you watch, if you missed SmackDown in the morning, you could watch Match of the Day, and it started at 11 o'clock on Sky Sports 1, and Match of the Day finishes, and then you watch SmackDown. I did that for years. And Rory, you'll be able to tell us better than anybody, because you've lived through it this year. The invasion is always absolutely panned by people, because predominantly it was a completely missed opportunity. They whiffed on it, and people, but that is treated as if it's one of the worst things in the world. I would watch anything from the invasion. Over, admittedly, I'm an invasion mark, because that was when I started. Watching it. But I would watch anything from the invasion over what we're getting presented just now. I'd watch 2004, which wasn't great. I had more fun preparing for Battle Bowl 1993 for the chicken salad last month than I did watching anything that WWE's produced this year. It is a coincidence why the Twitch live watches stopped after SummerSlam this year. SummerSlam beat us into submission that night. It cannot be understated if you haven't listened to it, it is on YouTube. It's in the live watch archives there. But it cannot be understated, even after we went off air, how beaten down and how miserable we all were. And the away team who were in the Allegiant Stadium that night had a great time, and I'll not take that away from them. But the home team were miserable, because there was nothing that was that we talked before on air about the upcoming chicken salad, and that show had. The show that they're going to do had no redeeming qualities. But it seems like everything that they're producing just now has no redeeming qualities. And I don't want, none of us want it to be like that. None of us are. We are all fans of professional wrestling. None of us want the WWE to fail. None of us want the WWE to put on utter shite every Monday, every Thursday, every fourth Sunday. None of us want that. But none of us can really help it at this point in time. I said to you guys during the week when we were, I was going to say preparing. I know. I'll crack more funny jokes like that. the difference between now and everyone's going, the AEW is the kick up the ass that they need. But it's different now. It's not 25, not 1996 anymore. If they weren't signing billion-dollar contracts, it's the kick up the ass they need. If they were not guaranteed $15 million, or certainly pre-Peacock, $15 million or however much it is a month from their 1.5 million subscribers worldwide, guaranteed a month, it might be the kick up the ass. If they were still relying on the pay-per-view income that was never guaranteed, then it might be the kick up the ass they need. WCW in 1996 was the kick up the ass that WWF needed, because if they didn't change, they were going out of business. There's not that threat anymore. This is never... AEW could go on and become the undisputed number one. And the only hope in hell that the WWE have at this point in time of overtaking them again is if Tony Khan runs out of money and they go out of business. Because they'll never change. They're getting billion-dollar TV deals. They are getting ungodly amounts of money every year from the Saudi Arabian government. They're getting money from NBC Universal or they just signed a billion-dollar contract from NBC Universal to take over the WWE network. They've still got hundreds of thousands of subscribers worldwide who are paying £10 a month or 10 whatever currency they use in a month. There is no need for them to change at this point, which is sad. Because JT put it right on his news podcast with Rocco that he did. It's going to take the old man to be out of the way in one way, shape or form. Because he's got the final say in everything. Triple H goes down with his heart condition, and has been nowhere to be seen since. Although he was at the there was a video of him going around of the construction site of their new headquarters. So it looks as if he's back on his feet, which is good news. But he goes down with that ailment. Next thing you know, NXT's back under Vince's vision, and it's now fucking multicoloured. It looks like the Steiner brothers attire from the early 1990s. it's just everything they do is just arse backwards. And it's not one of the earliest phrases we coined on this, guys, was it's not rocket science. It's not fucking rocket science. Put on things that people would want. Don't have a 78-year-old man, or however old he is, don't have a 78-year-old man dictating things. Because as much as he would have been in his early 50s in the Attitude Era, he was probably still young enough and had people around him who were young enough to know what people might actually want. He had Vince Russo. Doesn't have that anymore. He's surrounded by yes men. As much as Bruce Pritchard on his thing says, I used to have arguments with Vince McMahon all the time, he's got no fucking backbone. He's just as bad as the rest of them. See, at the end of the day, he'll go, it'll be like, I don't think you should do that, sir. What did you say, Bruce? Nothing, sir. He's just like the rest of them, I imagine. The big thing in one of our chats this time was, should WrestleMania go to this year? One of the big debates was, should WrestleMania stay as a 2-day event? And the vast majority of people said yes, because sitting through 8 hours of it, sitting through two lots of 4 hours, is much better than sitting through 8 hours of the same shit. And we will watch WrestleMania this year because we just do it out of obligation. It's like what I say to you guys, and I say on Twitter all the time when I'm watching Scotland play any form of sport. I do it out of obligation more than any expectation of enjoyment. And ironically, the best shows that they had were during the pandemic, where you would have thought that would be a reason for them to half-ass it, because they're not performing in front of fans. That was some of the best shows, and ever since they've had fans back, it seems that the shows have just declined in quality. They've had their, you mentioned, it was a great point you made about Roman, and they don't even have anyone on his level. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, if that's the right turn of phrase. They wanted for everything to Roman to be the guy. And now Roman's the guy. They've made him too much of the guy. He's laid waste to everybody. And now you look at it and he's a champion that you don't think he's going to... That's their next disappointment waiting to happen. Whoever beats Roman eventually, you either have two issues. You're going to have him have this Hogan-type run where he's going to hold it for years and years and years until they figure out something that somebody can beat them, until their Randy Savage comes along. Or you've just set yourself up for your next disappointment, and you can see it happening at Cowboy Stadium next year, sorry, whatever it's called now, AT&T Stadium next year. No one is at the level that they can beat Roman Reigns. So whoever takes the belt off him, it's automatically going to be a disappointment. And if it's going to be Damian Priest, or it's going to be Omos, or whoever it's going to be, you cannot see who's going to win the Royal Rumble. You cannot see who's going to challenge for any of those. Especially Roman. I mean, they might as well, at this point in time, they might as well go for The Rock, because they've got, I cannot think of anyone else that they could do. Short of bringing Steve Austin back, I cannot think of anything. They would need to do a Steve Austin or a Rock type, because there's no one else that they can do. They have made such a terrible, they've driven away Daniel Bryan. They've driven away Adam Cole. Adam Cole was never going to beat Roman Reigns. They've driven all these guys away to pastures new. Not necessarily AEW, but they've driven all these guys away to pastures new and fucking sacked them. Yeah. You just don't see where it's going. You don't see a turnaround. And I think the Manchester United analogy, Ben, was absolutely spot on. Because they've got somebody at the top who is... We've got decision makers who aren't going anywhere. Vince McMahon is the Glazers. They've got your sort of guys underneath that who don't have a clue what they're doing. So that's your Ed Woodwards. You've then got, and I suppose, you bring in... I suppose that makes Stingy. What's his name? Harry Smith. They made a big deal of signing this guy and then didn't do anything with him. He makes them the Donny van de Beek, I suppose. yeah, it's the analogy is spot on. And I think you'll see the same thing. It's going to be, it could be a long time before they hit the heights that they did before. Because they don't need to. But yeah. It doesn't need to be, it's not rocket science. Just make it watchable. That's all I'm asking. And I think Rory said they talk about the second W has gone by the wayside, or he forgets about the wayside. He seems to have forgotten about the last letter as well, because it's certainly not fucking entertaining just now.
It'd be interesting. I knew we'd all be on pretty. I didn't think we'd be as similar as we are, by the way. But I knew we were sort of all leaning that way. It would be. I would loved it if we'd have had one of our American friends on with us, somebody who watches it week to week and could tell me one thing that's entertaining. Because I can think of
somebody we could have got.
But you know the point I'm trying to make.
It's like, I agree.
Tell you guys, it's like you know, we were in chat groups, and when they go up, we've all mentioned it, the whole Roman thing. Who's going to beat Roman? Well, I don't care. Like I say, if Cena beats him, so what? If The Rock beats him, so what? If Brock Lesnar beats him, so what? They're going to be gone. It needs to be one of your people who are going to be around every week. You should beat him. Make a name. That's what you used to do.
Yeah, if it is The Rock, and I've got to say, after his, by all accounts, no-show of Survivor Series, because they're clearly angling for him to be there, and he has every right to turn him down. He's also not on the latest documentary either. Anyway, if and I don't think it's going to happen, but for the sake of argument, we'll say he does turn up at WrestleMania. He can't beat Roman, because what does that say about all the rest of your roster? What does that say? You haven't been able to beat this guy for nearly 2 years, but a 50-year-old Rock is able to do so. That, if anything, that would just exacerbate the issue and make it as if it needs to be any clearer, as plain as the nose on my face. So they have, I'm loath to criticize them for this, because they've handled Roman so well. The amount of other things they've got wrong, they've got it all right with Roman. But Callum described it perfectly. It's now a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I'm all for dominant champions and getting behind the guy who I think is going to dethrone them. But they've done a terrible job of even suggesting who that's going to be. And you compare that with AEW. And the story was told for many months that it was going to be Hangman Page who did so. And they stayed the course, and look what happened. I don't think they have any idea who it's going to be. But whoever it does end up being, because they haven't put enough stock in them, it's going to end up being a letdown.
Yeah, because, if they start with somebody tomorrow, that's going to be, what, a five-month build at best?
On you go, man.
No, I was going to say, because if it's WrestleMania, which, you presume that's going to be the big crowning moment, it's going to be a five-month build. You know, like Rory says, I don't want to go about AEW, but, the Hangman Page story has been going on for the best, for 3 years since the company started. And I said it to you guys off air a couple of months ago when you got to the Casino Battle Royal. I said, what a good company you'll do here is bring Hangman Page back. The crowd will lose their shit, figuratively and literally, and they'll get right behind him. And guess what happened? Another big issue I've got with the WWE, and I could have mentioned it in my rant, actually, what was their biggest strength a couple of years ago is now their biggest weakness. Everybody learned to wrestle the same way, the same match, the same style. The commentators do everything with Vince in the headset. They do everything the same. You said it when we talked about All Out, Callum. What was the thing about All Out? And I'll take always the thing that I took away that you said it was a show with something for everyone. The WWE is something for a very niche audience at this point, and it is something for kids. And as a 40-year-old man, guess what? I'm not a kid anymore.
I just want to say on that, you're absolutely correct. But I went to the house show in Birmingham, here, Birmingham, England, second city where I live, a few years ago. I'll tell you, a few weeks ago with my wife.
You could have gone a few years ago as well.
We had a fantastic time. We talked about that a couple of episodes ago. And we went and we had a great time. Let's put that on the record. It was great. The 3 hours absolutely flew by, which is a point to note. And it looked like everybody on the card was out there having fun, which is the most important thing, especially for a house show when it's, you've got to work extra harder to get people going, I think. And everybody on the roster from Carmella up, they did that. And again, I'm not going to ding them for that.
No.
I would say, though, the audience, probably about 6,000, 7,000 capacity at whatever they're calling the Birmingham NIA Arena this month. It changes all the time. Utilitas Arena or something. I would say 70% families.
Mm-hmm.
And again, absolutely nothing wrong with that whatsoever. I have zero problem with any high quality forms of family entertainment. None. It's a good thing. It really is a good thing. Toy Story, Maid Marian and Her Merry Men. I could list many, many more. Aimed at kids, can be enjoyed by everybody. In its own right, zero problem with that. But it did show who the WWE's main constituency is these days. That doesn't make it a write-off. That doesn't, as it does criticize me when people say the problems with WWE about they have PG programming. Absolutely not. Nothing to do with it. You can still tell compelling week-to-week storylines and have great in-ring action with PG, Like, one of my favourite years of all time is 1994 from an in-ring perspective. That probably even barely got below U level, let alone PG. And look at just the great matches we had and great storylines too. I'm sure you're thinking of them all now as I mentioned them. So I don't think that is the problem. And I know Vince talks about cradle to the grave, pal, which is all very fanciful, I think. I just want to drive people to the grave much sooner than their natural end, and they're probably heading the right way about that. But it is something to at least note. I'm not, again, I said it in my last rant 20 minutes ago. I'm going to say it again now. I am categorically not calling for a return to the Attitude Era or anything remotely like it. People think that will solve all of WWE's problems. Completely untrue. But they need to be aware of who their audience is. It's either young families or men primarily over 50. Okay. And if they're happy with that, and again, they can be, nothing intrinsically wrong with it at all. I'm going to repeat myself till blue in the face on that one. And if they are happy with that and the amount of money they're getting from elsewhere would suggest they probably are, and that's fine. But they can't be surprised that people who don't fall into those brackets are now choosing to look elsewhere.
And the other part of it is, as you just said, we're in the, you know, the quote unquote PG era. This has been going on since 2008, so it's not a, you know, it's not a thing of, oh, I don't like PG wrestling, because guess what, 2011 was pretty damn good. 2013 and 14 were pretty damn good.
Yeah, did okay with PG then, didn't we? Yeah.
2018 was pretty damn good. So let's not say it's not a PG thing. It's nothing to do with that. It's just
that's disingenuous. It's gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wrestling wasn't popular in 1996 and 1997 and 1998 because it was like for a mature audience. I don't know what the thing was for Nitro, but if it was PG-13 or TV-14 or whatever it is.
Oh, Nitro was definitely PG. No. Bischoff said this many times. He wouldn't be allowed to make it anything greater than that, because Turner
WCW in 1996 got hot because it was entertaining. It wasn't because you were having guys saying fuck, piss, shit on TV. And the WWF got hot because Nitro was hot, and it gave that it was the antithesis of what Nitro was doing and what they were doing previously. It was just something different altogether. But it wasn't... If you go back and watch any of those 98, 99 Raws, there's a lot of shite on them as well.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's not... Rory, you, of course, you'll know better than me and Ben. But... people have this fanciful memory that the Attitude Era was fucking home run every time somebody walked out of the curtain. It's not true.
Also, believe me, you had largely shite matches, certainly outside the main events. You had casual racism. You had not so casual misogyny. You had probably not casual homophobia, and God knows what else. So again, people looking back to those days through misty eyes, I'd use the Kleenex for something else if I was you.
I always remember the thing. I thought this might be in late 96 or whenever, but they used the fact that Goldust wasn't gay to turn them face. I'm sorry, I don't think that. I mean, that's and this is what people hold on their pedestal. I mean, fucking hell. It's just like, all we're asking, we're not asking for anything edgy. We're not asking for fucking... We're not asking for much. We're just asking to be entertained.
And like Rory said before, they're not moving with the times. They're still stuck in thinking they could just clear everybody out in the same ways that they could in the 80s and 90s. You know, for all this talk that Vince and people, WWE people do that say that, you know, I'm going to mention it again, AEW is not competition. Well, you seem to be doing quite a few overruns into Rampage, don't you? If it's not competition, though, you know, it's not competition and all that. And I will admit, AEW did the buy-in as well to cut in, so I'm not gonna shirk away from that. But the issue is there is AEW are both David and Goliath in this situation. There, you know, they're David in terms of, you know, a startup wrestling company, but they're Goliath in terms of they've got a shitload of money behind them. And Tony Khan, if you know, they've got the money mark. You know, same with the NWA with Billy Corgan. You know, when the money marks are there, guess what? You can't run them out. And especially now we live in a society of everything being streamed on a streaming society. It doesn't necessarily matter if you're on a network, if you're on television. That's an added bonus now. You can quite happily run your company if you've got the money on something like a Bleacher Report or Fight quite easily.
I'm glad you brought up the NWA there, Ben. And I know it's not everyone's cup of tea. But I have paid, so since the day and minute the WWE Network came out in the UK, I have been a paying subscriber. So how long has that been? That's been, what, 6 years now?
2015. The Royal Rumble 2015 was the first event.
Yeah. So Royal Rumble 2015. So that's almost 7 years now. And I have paid £10 a month religiously since that point. They get my £9 or £10 a month regardless of how well they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the thing. Football clubs get mocked for this all the time, and I saw it the other day, and I think it was a college football game in the States. They said they say the attendance is 100,000. That's how many tickets they've sold. Doesn't necessarily represent how many people are there. The WWE can claim that they have had 1.5 million people watching fucking Crown Jewel, because that's how many people have paid for that month and have access to that that show. The NWA have got I think it's a week from today, if you listen to this, the day it drops, December 4th, NWA, I've got a pay-per-view, and it costs in the UK £20 or $25, I believe it is, in the States. And none of these guys are household names, but I can assure you, you'll get more bang for your buck for the £25, $25 or the £20 you put down to watch the NWA show than you will for your £9.99 for the WWE Network. And that's the difference. I don't even think, it's not that it's not entertaining, because Ben, you talk about getting value for money as long as you have one or two matches that's up to snuff, that'll do you.
Yeah.
You don't get anything for your tenner.
Obviously our pay-per-views on Fight are a lot cheaper than the American versions, but I always say when I buy an Impact show, when I buy an AEW show, they're $19.99. So for my £20, all I'm looking for is three matches to be good. And I've got my money's worth. Now, I appreciate for our American friends who have to pay $50, $60, you're expecting a lot more. But, you know, for $9.99, I ain't getting any good new content. I've got all this great archive footage, which I absolutely love to bits, but I ain't getting anything good that's new. You know, like I say, they've ruined NXT. They've absolutely ruined NXT, and I will... and you know, I don't care what people say about old Bron Breakker or whatever his name is, or Von Wagner or whatever. You know, the stupid, you know, the name generator aside, they've ruined that show, and I will say that till Kingdom Come.
It's just wee things as well. Right, so NXT, I've not seen NXT 2.0. I don't have ready access to BT Sport, and I don't care enough to watch it on.
On a week delay, yeah.
I don't care to do it. What I have seen of Bron Breakker, he does look really good for the amount of time that the guy's been doing it. Almost as if it's in his blood. You know what I'm saying?
They should strap a rocket to his back. That part I've got no problem with. It's just, it's like you said, the whole multicoloredness. It's the fact that, like I said before, it looks like a '91 version of primetime wrestling. It's that I don't like.
But it's not even that. It's just small things. Like, they were originally going to call Bron Breakker Rex Steiner. But oh, we can't have him called Steiner. We can. We'll make allusions every week to the fact that he's related to Scott, Rick and Scott Steiner, but we'll not beat you over the head with it. Even though, like, there's no disputing who his father is. I mean, it's like fucking spit image.
And the apple hasn't fallen too far from the tree.
It has not. And he dresses like them, and he wrestles like them. I mean, it's just, but you just have this thing, like, you don't want, it's just, they're falling back into their old habits, and it's not good, and it will not. And when they were in these old habits the last time, it took them a long time to shake them, and it was what was his name? Oh, that's right, Phil Brooks. That's that punk guy. He got them out of that. What's he doing now? Ah, that's right. He's on the other channel.
You know, just to bring it back to the beginning, and then we can move on. Like I say, I love pro wrestling. I don't love the WWE at the moment. It's almost like, and I, you know, it's a horrible analogy to use. It's almost like having, you know, a dying relative. You remember everything that was great about that person, but you don't want them to suffer anymore. And that's where I am. I don't want them to suffer anymore. If that means they get bought out and we start again, so be it. That's just where I am at the moment.
However, all might not be lost, because there's time once again for the 10-minute rule bill.
No pressure, Cal.
Edition number 3. And we have been given advance notice of the content of this piece of legislation. Our last two 10 MRBs have been us expressing satisfaction and dissatisfaction with certain elements of professional wrestling. But Callum here has something that might just improve the lot of his constituents.
Yeah, we need to get out of this funk if we can.
Should it get the backing of the government front bench? Order, 10-minute rule bill. I call Mr. Callum McDougall.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. So, for this 10-minute rule bill, I am looking to change the Survivor Series, and hopefully in turn change how the WWE would view the presentation, and hopefully it would meet the acceptance or the approval of my colleagues on the front bench, being you two gentlemen. First things first, I must, the preamble to this is that I, unfortunately for my colleague, the Right Honourable Member from Stoke-on-Trent, we will be keeping the Raw versus SmackDown theme. It will be for brand supremacy. However, the big change to that is there's not a draft 3 weeks before the show. There is no draft whatsoever. The rosters will have stayed the same, and much like sport in overseas in the United States of America, there will be a trade deadline. The trade period opens from the Raw after WrestleMania and will close the night of Survivor. Close the night of SummerSlam. The trade deadline is the night of SummerSlam. There's no resetting of the rosters. You can have trades going back and forward through that 6-month period, but after that, there's no movement until the night after WrestleMania the next year. That way, you don't have guys pretending they care about what happens on Raw or SmackDown, having only been employees of that particular brand for that particular 3-week period. The issue with the Survivor Series brand supremacy concept, as we've spoken about previously, is that there's no stakes involved. However, that's the first thing I would change. So you would continue to have the same types of matches. You would have your 5-on-5 men and women's tag team elimination matches. The difference being is that historically, I've always remembered that the Survivor Series was always the start of the road to WrestleMania, not the Royal Rumble, as they like when they have that big sign in there. The surviving team, the surviving members of the team that win the men's and women's Survivor Series matches, will be the last competitors in the Royal Rumble. So if you have all five surviving, then they will be numbers 26 through 30 in the Royal Rumble of their respective gender. Obviously, that may cause a problem because who survives more, who goes where? That's where you have TLC. If there is two people left, if there's one person, easy, they're number 30. They're going to wrestle, they're going to the Royal Rumble. They're guaranteed number 30. If there's two at TLC, there'll be a playoff match and the winner gets 30, the loser gets 29. If there is more than two competitors, it's an elimination match, and then the earlier you get eliminated is the earlier you'll come in the Royal Rumble. But essentially, you'll be in the last five competitors to come in. You will still have the United States champion versus Intercontinental champion. That will be the winner of that match will get to face his brand's champion and an opportunity to become a double champion again at TLC. There will be I'm bringing back the five tag team versus five tag team match. Again, the survivors, they do get their opportunity to have a tag team championships shot on their show at the TLC pay-per-view. The champion versus champion for the Universal WWE and the Raw and SmackDown Women's Champions, at this point in time, there will be an incentive. I've not quite thought about what the incentive would be at this point in time. However, there would be an incentive attached to that, be it monetarily or some form of, there will be an incentive at that point, because what you want to do is you want to have a reason to win. And again, that would be the case for the tag team champions facing off against each other. What will also happen is there'll be a sports-based presentation. We all like a sports-based presentation. There'll be the wee score in the bottom corner. It's not going to be on matches. Whoever wins this match, it's a point for their show. No. What's going to happen is that for the purposes of this, we'll base it on Starrcade 89. 20 points for a pinfall or submission, 15 for a count-out victory, 10 for a DQ, 5 for a time limit draw, and nothing for a loss. But each elimination and the elimination matches will also count towards those scores. Because why should a match that has could potentially have 9 pinfalls, why is that the same as a match that has 1 pinfall? It will all count towards the bottom, and you'll see the score ticking up as we go along. The winning show itself, there will be a monetary prize. There'll be a monetary prize for everyone who competed on that night. And the hope that this is because there's always I believe, from listening to Viewer's Choice, there was at least two occasions where somebody walked out on their team, somebody intentionally screwed their team over. Hopefully this would play into that. You've also can have a story going through that there's somebody on Raw intentionally get disqualified because they will have, you know, it's better for them to lose 10 points than for the other guy to potentially win 20. There could be through stories like that. But hopefully that will then lead in, kickstart the road to WrestleMania. You've got storylines involved for the Royal Rumble. You've got storylines involved for TLC, so it doesn't seem like a meaningless show between Survivor Series and the Rumble. And hopefully it brings some better, it gives an all-round better presentation because there are stakes involved. I'm happy to take questions from the floor.
That's very good. Well done. I'll just jump in very quickly because my hatred of Survivor Series is very well known. But Callum's actually addressed a lot of my issues with that format, because why am I interested in a 5-on-5 Survivor Series match where 90% of the competitors were on the other show literally 3 weeks ago? That's not interesting. Why would I care about that? Oh, because he's wearing a blue T-shirt now. Right, got you. And also, the stakes involved. Like I say, whether it's money, whether it's a title shot or a rumble, or, you know, favours in the rumble, that works. The only bit I will disagree with, because we really didn't like it when we talked about Starrcade 89 on Salad, is the whole number, the point system, because that gets very confusing very quickly, and, you know, People like me who, you know, getting on a bit now, we need nice simple numbers to deal with. But I would watch that show over what we got any day of the week.
The point system is not a set in stone. It can be tweaked, and I'm hoping for cross party discussions with that to try that and get that bottom down.
That would be the only review that we would need to do. The rest of it, I'm absolutely on board with.
You're looking to table an amendment, the honourable member there, for that's Stoke on Trent.
That's the word I'm looking for. That would be the only amendment I would make.
I'll have to see if the speaker selects that. Maybe one for committee stage. Yeah, some really, really great ideas there. The Royal Rumble one, I just want to pick up on because, broadly speaking, I think it's a terrific idea. But once again, the WWE are ahead of us on this one in a roundabout way because it's been proved very often, indeed just twice this very year, that entering a late number in the Royal Rumble isn't an advantage anymore. Bianca won from number 3. Edge won from number 1. So they'd need to make a late entry in the Rumble actually mean something again. But yeah, discussion for another day. As far as Survivor Series is concerned and giving it some form of attempted meaning, then I think that is a great idea. And I like the Starrcade 89 scoring system. I liked it at Starrcade 89. It was just a bit too clever for its own good. I think on this occasion, if you do keep now, of course, we're all very used to having a score in the top left-hand corner of the screen anyway. I think if you have it on there on a constant ticker, you know, people like Ben, bless his cottons, won't get too lost on this one.
You know, I don't pay attention, boys. Come on.
Just anything just to make it feel like one of the big five, and it is the big five because Money in the Bank is definitely in that category now. Sometimes I do wonder if Vince should have stuck to his guns, and how often do we say that in 2010 when he outright said in an interview that Survivor Series might be time to put out to pasture. But of course, the man babies who just won't let go. Toys went out the pram yet again, and on this occasion, Vince actually listened. I think he would have been well served not to. But yeah, some fine ideas there, Callum, and I sincerely hope that the powers that be do put them forward, because if Survivor Series is just a hindrance and an annoyance for the WWE themselves, then how else do they think that the fans are going to treat it?
And I've also just come up with one last quick. Instead of
you have 10 seconds.
Okay, instead of the Battle Royal, it's a 15-minute match. You've got 20 guys in, and it's just pinfall, 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 much like the Hardcore Battle Royal at WrestleMania. And many pinfalls, that picks up all the points as well. Just a 10-minute mental match.
Order. Order.
We've done it again.
Putting the world to rights once more. If only they'd listen. Well, I think we've definitely earned a break there, gentlemen.
I think so too.
Thanks. So my head
Callum,
hurts.
I shall let you round out part one.
Well, my head hurts after.
What was your idea? Well worth it.
Well, a very spirited discussion in the first one. We do like to keep it serious sometimes. Not very often, but for you know the anniversary special, I feel like it was required. So thank you, Ben, for starting us off with that one. We'll not talk about the November pay per view again until next November. But yes, thank you for it. We hope you enjoyed the first part of the show. If you've got any comments on that as well, just always hit us up. We have got our Twitters. We've got the show Twitter at PTBN. PTBN Spec Rail 1. Let us know your thoughts on the Survivor Series and what we discussed there. And the upcoming break will be the perfect time to do that. So get your tweets in, and we will see you on the other side. Pleased to be Wrestling Network fans, welcome back to the second half of the Special Relations Podcast, episode number 24, the anniversary show. Second anniversary, I still can't believe it. And I know we say it all the time, but genuinely it is surprising we got here after December to Dismember. In episode number two, we had, collectively, the three of us had a massive set of balls for doing that. But we're here, we're still here. Thanks to anyone who's listening and has potentially tweeted us over the break there about their thoughts on the Survivor season, the current state of WWE. We hope you enjoyed that first part. A bit more serious than we're used to, but I feel like every now and then it is required. So on to a more lighter topic. Ben, would you like to introduce the? I can do it if you wish, because it was my choice.
I was going to say like a topic that you picked.
Yeah, Ben, I'll introduce you to introduce this. Fling it straight back to me. after the sort of heavy topic. That we spoke about in the first half. Given that it's November, it is only right that we talk about our interview review, which came from the 2011 DVD documentary, WWE's Greatest Rivalries, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. A bit of a lighter subject. He says with no hint of irony there. For those who haven't seen it, it was a two-hour sit-down interview with Bret and Shawn, and they go through their origins in the WWE, and obviously they wouldn't get away with not talking about the elephant in the room, which was Montreal 1997. But it does, for me, it seems to have a happy-ish ending or a happy end. I just want to know, first of all, I'll go to you first, Ben, since I threw it over to you before and then, you know, yanked it back off you. What were your overall thoughts on the interview itself, and anything that stands out for you?
First of all, I don't want anything yanking off me. Thank you very much. Second of all, as for the interview itself, right. So I thought they came across as we kind of expected them to. So, you know, Bret was very serious and marked for himself, but he knew his truth. He knew his truth, and everything he said, you could believe. You might not agree with it, but everything he said, you could believe. Now, as for Shawn, everything up to 93, he seemed to know quite a decent amount of. Everything, obviously, from 2002 onwards, he knows quite a bit about. The middle bit, he has got absolutely no clue on. And now, if that's a drink or drugs thing, or if that's just him protecting his image thing, I don't know. And I don't necessarily know if either option, you know, you could come to a conclusion from the interview. But it was very clear that, like I say, one guy was quite coherent, quite believable. Like I say, if you wanted to agree with him, that's another matter. Whereas the other guy was just basically rambling and, you know, didn't say much of sense. And the other thing that struck me watching it is, you know, Bret was saying all this stuff for Shawn, and Shawn was just sitting there and taking it. He wasn't even replying back because he knew he couldn't.
No, I think you're right. I think it seemed to be very important for both men. It was Bret seemed to get a lot of stuff off of his chest, and Shawn, for the most part, as you say, just sat there and took it, because a lot of the stuff he might think now, in the place that he is in life, he has no comeback for. He's no justification for a lot of the stuff. So it was, yeah, the dynamic they had between the two of them was very interesting, especially when they get on to 96 and 97. Rory, what were your thoughts on the interview, and again, anything in particular stand out for yourself?
Yeah, I'd seen this a couple of times. I actually bought it pretty shortly after it came out, this DVD, because, well, who wouldn't? Watch it a couple of times since. Just quickly, I do, if I remember correctly, that there was a plan to make the Greatest Rivalries a series. But when you're starting with Shawn versus Bret, which is going so heavily behind the curtain during the course of a 2-hour interview, nothing is really going to follow that. So if that was the idea, I can understand why they nixed it after just one edition. But really, what else do you need? I thought, much like Ben did, that difference between the two guys was absolutely staggering and startling. It was as if Bret Hart had never talked about this topic before, which, of course, we all know is nonsense. He talked about it at length in his Calgary Sun article on November the 10th, 1997. If you've read his book, probably about 80 pages deal with just the aftermath of Montreal alone. That's probably stiffing it, to be honest. And how many more times in other shoot interviews placed like off the record? Who knows where else as well. But it just felt, for whatever reason, as though he was getting off his chest, as if it'd been eating at him for 14 years, which, of course, it had been. And I think he could have carried on talking for a lot longer than even the 2 hours allowed. Many cases, we only got the surface scratch through no fault of his own. It was just the time they had with the program. And if you compare that to Michaels, who you both said he sat there and took it, and I, broadly speaking, agree with that. He is a very different person to how he was then, no question. But the sense I got, especially when we really got to late 96, early 97, and Montreal starts getting closer and closer, Michael's body language changes quite dramatically during that one as well. Got two things from that. Number one, that he remembers a hell of a lot more than he let on. I said a lot of things, but then, you know what, I don't. You know, but this hand movement thing he does, you know, don't remember, you know, if I said that, but, you know, I could have, you know, said that at the time, you know, I was that sort of person, you know. So that's number one. Number two, you have to watch very closely here, but when Bret is almost in tears talking about the Montreal situation, you just look at Shawn, just sits back in his chair a little bit, relaxes up for the first time in the day, just lets Bret do all the talking at that point, especially as if to say, oh boy, this again. I mean, Michaels knows that it will follow him around until the day he dies. He's well aware of this, but I think he is probably, in as much as he can be, at peace with it. And we'll get into a bit more detail now, of course. He never said that himself. He talked about being at peace with Bret, which is the most important thing, but never said he was at peace with the situation. But just his body language and his demeanor suggested that, oh, okay, let's go through this again then, ho-hum. Whereas for Bret, it was outright catharsis.
Yeah, I think as well, just piggybacking off what Rory said, I think that was probably the first time Bret had said that in front of Shawn and in front of JR.
Yes, that's a very important distinction. Yeah,
and I think that's why it felt like you say, like catharsis, like something new. We know he said it tons of times in his book, in his online shoot interviews or whatever, but that was the first time he said it in front of them two people, and that's what made it so important to Bret, I think.
Yeah, you could tell that it was as you said, it was a cathartic experience for him. Shawn was probably just thinking, oh, here we go again, because Bret is the only person in this that's not wrong. Like, no matter what happened in the build-up, the only person out of the whole scenario who's been wronged is Bret Hart. So it's easy for Bret to say, if the shoe was on the other foot, I would never have done it. He might not have done it. He may well have done it. But at this point in time, it's very easy for Bret Hart to say, I would never have done that in the same position, because he was the one who was in the bad position, sort of thing. I can only imagine how Bret would have felt at that point in time, because he had given so much of his career to Vince McMahon. You do believe him when he said he was like another father figure to him. And for that all to happen, that you've been so, because he did have at least two opportunities to go to WCW and didn't take them. The loyalty wasn't shown the other way. I think that Sean at 1997, Sean. I don't know how to put this properly, but in 1997, Sean, I get the impression that he would have jumped at the chance to do it, and I think if he got the chance to do it, the night after he would have done it again, and he would have done it again the Tuesday, and he would have done it again the Wednesday. 2002, Sean, I think, wouldn't have done it, but I also think he's embarrassed for how 1997 Sean conducted himself.
That's really.
So I think had they have done it 10 years prior, or if Sean had never found God, then you might never had a DVD. But I think it would be the feeling between the guys might have been very, very different.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, the first part, the best parts of the actual interview are the first bit where they talk about the tag run, and the last part where they're talking about being, you know, a bit older, a bit wiser. That's the best part. And I don't know if you guys got the same impression, but for me, it felt almost like, for Sean, it was almost like a contractual obligation. He had to be there. Like, Brett wanted to be there, but Sean had to be there. I think Sean wants to be there at times, but like Rory said, they were always going to talk about 97 and 96 and the click. That was always going to come up, and JR can sit there and say, you know, your careers are never going to be defined by one night, but sadly, guess what? They are. You might be two of the best wrestlers of all time, but on one night, you created probably the biggest story in wrestling, so... Or you're part of the biggest story in wrestling. So guess what? Your careers are going to be defined by this one moment or night.
Yeah. Sean's maybe less so than Brett, because Sean did go on to have the amazing career after he came back in 2002. That it's maybe not, but Brett had that disaster of a run in WCW, and he was retired, forcibly retired within the 2 years, like 2 years, almost exactly 2 years later. So he never got the chance to sort of exercise that demon and create something that would that would overshadow it, where Sean did. And I think, I don't know if Brett finds, I don't know if that was part of the reason he later had his health issues. That's what he said anyway, that it was all stress related. But he never got to present anything that would have overshadowed, because it must really be, for everything that Bret Hart has done, and I've made no bones about it, that one of my criticisms for Bret Hart is that he's a mark for himself. He's a mark for himself, and he lives in a kayfabe world. I mean, it's just, for the longest time, it must have eaten him up knowing that that is what I'm going to be defined for, no matter how, like King of the Ring 93, which was an all-star performance, 5 WWF championships. Everyone's going to remember that one night, that one 15-minute affair in 1997. And I think that would probably play a lot on his mind. Notwithstanding the fact that in the interim, he lost Owen, he lost his mother and father, and then he lost Davey. But I think over the piece, I think he said it was all stress related that led to stroke, which was a difficult thing for him to talk about as well. But I think that I found it very interesting that they started talking about the bit up to about 95, when the Rockers came in for the second time, up to about 95. They were talking about how they were such good friends, and Sean would go to Brett's house and all that. I thought that was That was extremely interesting, and just to the contrast of how quickly it all went downhill.
Well, like we say, like Sean remembers what Sean wants to remember. So you know, those years when he was being an absolute cock, he's not gonna remember that, is he?
He remembers because he brought it up himself. He remembers going around to Brett's house.
Yeah.
Remembers that clear as day.
So here's a question for you. I'll ask you first, Rory. Do you think that Sean doesn't remember, or is it a case of Sean, 2011 Sean, being a completely different person, doesn't want to remember what he did because he is embarrassed, ashamed of how he acted?
I think, in all fairness, it's column A and column B here. I mean, during that 90s period, when he was on top in 96 and all his buddies sodded off and left him, he was taking a lot from column A and column B and column C, D and E, if you get what I'm saying. So that is going to leave a mark, no question. But I do think there is a bit of selective memory going on here. Just compare and contrast. It's on YouTube and it's well worth a watch because he brings up a lot of interesting points. Shoot interview that Michaels did, I believe it's for RF Video, in round about March, April 99. If you're not put off by the fact he's chewing tobacco throughout the whole thing, then it's worth sitting through even for that. Shawn Michaels is from San Antonio, Texas. Well, there we go. But you look at the Michaels there, and he is absolute devil may care. I said he let his guard down slightly towards the end of the Greatest Rivalries interview, but here it's up front and center. He's there, his head's cocked to the side, his feet are up. You know, he's got that ever-present smirk. You know the one. We saw a lot of it from Michaels in the 90s. Makes a lot of great points, don't get me wrong, but he just does not give one at that point. Not the proverbial monkeys. Because this was before, I'm going to put this as kindly as I can, Shawn Michaels 1999 existed before Shawn Michaels 2002. And this isn't the place for me to decide or discuss how legitimate Shawn Michaels 2002 to the present day actually is. That's discussion for another day and probably in front of another audience. Or maybe not, for that matter. Maybe that's one just to have my internal monologue. But the fact that Shawn 02 does exist is very, very fortunate for him. And it really does give him that out. But it's just a bit too convenient. It's all the right times. It's all about, he doesn't remember making the sunny days comment when it's not being shown to him. He doesn't recall telling Brett to his face that he wouldn't put him over. Bollocks, I'm not having that at all. There's not a chance in hell he would forget that, chemically induced or not. So there are elements to it. I won't argue that, but no, he. I'm internal wrangling right here before our listeners' ears, but he's a hard person to give the benefit of the doubt to. Let's leave it at that.
So a bit of podcast legend cynicism there from Mr. McNamara. Ben, what are your takes on that? Do we believe that he doesn't remember, or is it a case of he doesn't want to remember?
I'm pretty damn similar to where Rory is. It's a little column A, a little column B, because all the stories that we know of Shawn Michaels in the 90s, we know his drinking drugs, they were quite prominent from about 93. You don't get that belly that he's got at SummerSlam 93 just from not working out. Let's put it that way. So, and like we've said before, that, you know, he seems to remember 95 going around to Brett's house and all that. So are you telling me honestly that he can't remember something from 96 and 97? And it did blow my mind. I think there are certain details that he wants to forget and he's put it in the back of his mind quite deliberately, but he knows exactly what he was doing and he knows exactly what he was doing. Now, if that was caused by drinking drugs, that's fair enough. And You know, he's apologized and repented since, and I get all that. So, you know, the character the man shown, you know, post this time is to be applauded, and, you know, we should all be thankful for that. But, you know, there was enough people around him and enough people who knew what was going on. And like Rory says, like, you know, he chose to forget quite a bit there. That's the impression I got.
Yeah, I mean, I find it very.
It was all too convenient. Like the, you know, the big bits he forgot were just happened to be the bits that made him look like absolute shit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the purely cynical point of view, it was all very well timed. The bits that he forgot, all the bits that he forgot would be the main criticisms. But it was almost the bit that makes me. And which is why I brought up the point, you know, is the new reformed, extremely Christian Sean ashamed of how he acted, because he, in a roundabout way, did admit that happened, because his response to all those was, I don't remember it happened, but, you know, I know what type of guy I was at that time, and if Brett says it happened, it happened.
Yes. Now, yeah, that was, Cal, that was the bit that got me, because he kept saying that, didn't he, like, well, if you said that's what happened, it's like, yeah, I think you know that's what happened.
Yeah, he said that two or three times, especially around the Sunny Days. The Sunny Days one was the one I remember him saying at that. Now, that's him admitting that he knows that he said it. He does remember saying that, but he doesn't want to admit that he was that type of person at that point of view. I don't know if I'm making sense or not, but I think that to me is the current Shawn Michaels not wanting to admit that the previous Shawn Michaels was an arsehole. So yeah, but I do believe that he does let on more than he knows, but I think it's more of a shame than anything else, because if he was still the same person, then he would wholeheartedly admit, say, yeah, I said that.
Oh, I was. One thing I will defend Sean, well, I will side with Sean on, let's say that, to some degree. If he was still the same person he was in the mid-90s, he'd be dead.
Well, there is that as well.
This documentary would not exist. We would be talking about Michaels purely in the past tense.
There is no question.
If he carried on like that, there's only one outcome.
Yeah. Well, and it's I'm not going to get too religious and too theologian about it, but it's a very very religious thing, isn't it, to repent and show regret and to know what you've and to, you know, to repent and to forgive your sins and, you know, so like I say, I think 2011 Sean knows exactly what 97 Sean was like. I think yes, he's chose to forget some of the stuff, but he knows enough that he knows that. Likely 97 Sean was an absolute arse, and 2011 Sean is a totally different person. It's the same body, but in terms of mindset, it's a totally different person.
Yeah. I almost got the point at some the thought at some point that 2011 Sean didn't want to relive that because he didn't like the person that he was.
Yeah, no, that was totally the vibe I got, to be fair.
Now. You think you mentioned the word there, Ben, about the context, but you did mention the word regret on there. Next question is, do you believe Sean when he says he regrets doing it? Ben, I'll go to you first.
I was like I say, I think 2011 Sean regrets doing it. 97, 98 Sean would do it again in a heartbeat.
97, 98, Sean would have had the biggest erection thinking about doing it again.
Yeah. 2011, Sean regrets it big time, because it's going back to what I said. Like, I don't think either man wants their career, you know, defined or this match or incident to be remembered. But guess what? We spent 20 minutes, half an hour talking about it. And so do quite a lot of other wrestling fans. And that's just the way it is, unfortunately. But you know, and it's that thing as well of like newer fans. You're trying to explain this stuff back to them, and you're like, they can't believe this happened. It goes back to what we were saying in the first part, because yeah, with the WWE being the only show in town now, this wouldn't happen today. This just would not happen.
No, because the thing, I started watching it, Good Lady was out last night, and I was watching it, and I came back in, or she came back in, sorry, and it was at the point where both of them were getting, Brett especially, were getting upset. And I'm thinking to myself, if she asked me what's happening and why these guys are getting upset, I would need to, like, do a PowerPoint presentation and give her, like, a four-week fucking crash course on Shawn Michaels, the whole Shawn Michaels against Bret Hart thing. It's just, there's so much to take in that led to that point, that led to a boiling point, ironically, in Montreal, which is freezing most of the year, apparently, and where they are when at the time of the documentary.
Well, just to distill it slightly, you know, if you're talking to somebody who, like you say, like the good lady, or doesn't watch wrestling at all, or a newer fan, what are these two guys arguing? What's the bitterness? What are they arguing about? Oh, it was a finish to a fake wrestling match.
Yeah.
You know, when you say it as simply and as bluntly as that, it doesn't sound the thing to, you know, to define a rival, you know, to not talk to somebody for 10 years or to leave a job after however many years. But, you know, here we are.
Rory, just to get your opinion on it. Do you think Sean was being truthful when he said it was a very shit position to be in and that he regretted doing it?
Yeah, on this one I do, because it was a terrible position to be in. And on this one, I do broadly believe him when he says the idea wasn't his. I will say he has changed his tune on this one slightly. If you read his book, Heartbreak and Triumph, from 2005, which I can't really recommend, it's lots of factual errors and it's very obviously ghostwritten, but he or his ghostwriter makes more clear that he at least wanted to have some say in the final outcome. On the Heartbreak and Triumph DVD, it came out in 2007, again, excellent documentary, well worth your time. He says that it was pretty much the boy Helmsley who came with that now famous line, if he won't do business, you do business for him. I still think that Michael's stock in the company in 1997, remember, Vince was never, ever going to let him go. Okay, so over his dead body, was Michael's going to go to WCW at this point. So Michael's had a lot of sway and a lot of pull. I don't know the answer to the question, what would have happened if Michaels had outright said, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't have an answer for you on that one. It's quite the what if alternative history butterfly effect, looking glass, whatever you want to call it, isn't it that? But it wasn't his decision, okay? It wasn't even really Helmsley's decision. Vince was hoping and praying that his guilt trip would work and somebody else would then put the final words to him and just alleviate his own guilt, at least at that point. Vince very much owns it now. And that needs to be taken into account. Nothing like this would ever happen again today. It couldn't. The wrestling world is a very, very different place. Everybody knows the score now, and nor should it happen. Nobody should be treated like that again in the pro wrestling ring. You know, you turn up for work and you expect, if your boss gives you your itinerary, you expect that is going to be adhered to. And Brett turned up for work that day, whatever you might think of his reasons, he thought something was going to happen that day. And when he eventually clocked on to somebody, his day didn't quite turn out that way. And Michaels has to bear his own share of the blame. I want to put that on the record. Share of the blame for that. Maybe things might have been different if he had outright said no. I don't know either way. But this is one where I am going to say that Michaels is a genuinely reformed character. And I think he is, at the very least, embarrassed by it. Because as Ben says, whenever you think of Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels now, you don't think of their classic matches. You don't think of their great Michaels' great promos. You don't think of Bret's slightly ropier promos, for example. You don't think of the Hart Foundation stuff. You don't think of any of that. You think of Michaels cocking his head to the left, making sure Earl Hebner is watching, quickly switching his head again, Hebner shouting, ring the bell, then diving out of the ring. That's the first thing you now think about, word association with these two guys. And for very different reasons, the both of them just detest that.
I think at one point they mentioned WrestleMania 10, and both men on that show, with other people, had five-star matches. And all everyone talks about with Bret and Shawn is Montreal. So that must eat at both of them, even to this day. Now, just one quick question before we wrap up. I got the impression when they started talking about 96 and the start of the breakdown of the relationship, it all just seemed to be one big misunderstanding. Shawn thought that Bret didn't like him. Bret did like him, but Bret thought Shawn didn't like him, but Shawn didn't mind him. Is that simplifying it too much, or am I? Was I picking up on that? Or from
now, you reminded me
stories?
Of a, yeah, you reminded me of a great cipher from the interview. Again, I'm not sure how truthful it is, but Michaels brought it up himself on a couple of occasions, and he was saved by JR on another one when he was floundering. But for Michaels, it was all about getting Bret's respect and validation. Again, not sure how true that really rings when you think about it, but that is the reason that Michaels gave, and he relied on it quite a lot. It's, and I don't really want to repeat myself, but I'm gonna have to, because this is the source material Michaels giving me. It's just a little bit too convenient and a little bit too easy and a little bit too simplistic for that to be the reason. Michaels is holding on to some information here, and I don't think we will ever hear it in our lifetime. But he knows more than he's letting on. That's the one. I'm not going to call it a criticism, because it's not the fault of Shawn necessarily. He has no obligation to completely put everything out in the open. His choice. And one thing I did like about this documentary is that it was clearly almost entirely unedited. You could tell that it was 2 hours front to back, just say your piece, guys. And I love that about it. But Michael's relying on, oh, I just wanted to be his friend, I just wanted to get a shake of a hand from him, it got him through the 2 hours, but he didn't really get through to me by saying that.
Ben, what are your thoughts on that one?
I would very much agree with what Rory said. I think you can almost distill it into like one sentence, and that is, Shawn wanted forgiveness, but Bret will never forget.
No, I think you're right. Shawn was there. Yeah, I think Shawn was looking for forgiveness. Bret was looking for peace.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, Callum. I think Shawn was looking for forgiveness and got forgiveness. We're making it out like, you know, Bret has very much forgiven the man, and you know, like, you wouldn't have had a segment like they had on Raw, that segment they had on Raw. You wouldn't even have this interview if they hadn't forgiven. So that's fine. But
no, and I know, think that's the most important. I am glad that they aren't. Well, so this interview was 10 years ago now, but I haven't heard anything to the contrary that they're still not on good terms. And you said it in your last piece there, Ben. We're talking about the ending to a scripted piece of entertainment here at the end of the day, and that should not tear people apart. You can have your disagreements over it, you can have your ructions in the back, but this shouldn't lead to 13 years of pure enmity. And I am glad that at least that has finally been buried along with the hatchet, if not the memories.
Absolutely.
So, overall, guys, what any final thoughts on?
Yeah, really strong documentary, and I would highly recommend it. In 2 hours, but it goes by in a trice. It's really well structured with about 4 or 5 video packages introducing the certain sections. I think JR holds things together extremely well. He only comes in when he needs to. He only is really there to move things along. Just have a couple of nice barbs when he talks about Sean giving up titles and things like that. But otherwise, he just asks the questions and lets the other guys do their thing, only coming in when he just wants to nudge them in another direction. He was the right guy to host this. When you think about it, this could have been somebody like fucking Josh Matthews or somebody. But JR had the knowledge, the gravitas, and the respect to carry it through. Brett, I think, could have spoken about this for another hour or two. Maybe if there is some Rush's footage out there, I would quite like to see it. Sean was happy to get to the end of it, but I wasn't happy to get to the end of it. And I mean that with a huge soupçon of praise. This is a great DVD set. We'll talk about that more in a second, but a tremendous documentary. It's pretty simple. It's not especially flashy. It can be quite dry because the speaking bits go on for about 15, 20 minutes without a break. But if you give it your full attention, you really will be rewarded. And you might, just might, learn something from it as well.
Yeah, so I mean, like Rory says, like the actual 2-hour documentary is fantastic. It's really good and pretty great. And like I said a couple of times, my favorite parts were the very beginning when they're talking about the tag team and they talk about the Rockers and the Heart Foundation, and the end. The actual Montreal stuff, it's not dull. I'm not saying it's dull, but the actual where Sean is the most coherent and is being the most honest. That for me was the best, most entertaining part. And like I said, Brett, yes, Brett's a mark for himself and he can be uber serious at times. We get all that, but this was his truth. And there was an air of authenticity and an air of believability about it. So, you know, and like Rory said, JR's definitely the right choice for it. You know, he was there, he lived it as well as the other two gents. And yeah, the 2 hours for me absolutely flew by. It was, you know, at no point did I feel like I need to switch off or pause.
And it gave us the immortal line, we worked ourselves into a shoot.
That's what they did, brother.
If you want the 2 hours and 2 seconds, we worked ourselves into a shoot.
Yeah, so I agree with both of you. With both of you on that one. I would highly recommend anyone watch it. Unfortunately, it's not on the network anymore. We've all watched it from the DVD, but yeah, I think it wasn't a hatchet job of either man. Both men spoke their truth. As was mentioned, Brett, more than Sean. But Sean gave up as much as he felt comfortable with, and one that wouldn't necessarily put him in a worse light. 2 hour documentary, the Montreal Screwjob only covered about 20 to 30 minutes of it. There was a good bit about the both of the tag teams, and then as they were going up the ranks, and then afterwards. So they didn't dwell. It's not a 2 hour discussion about Montreal. But yeah, I think JR was definitely the right guy to do it. I think it was important. You could tell personally for both men, it was important for them to do it. But I would for anyone who hasn't seen it, I would try and source a way that you can watch it, because it's 2 hours that as the guys have said, it'll go by in a clip. So so greatest rivalries, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels, definitely in the recommended. In the recommended pile.
Callum, yes. Sorry to interrupt. As it is our anniversary show, can you just remind the good ladies and gentlemen what DVD stands for, please?
Oh, a digital versatile disc.
Thank you very much. I need to clarify that.
Not done that in a while. So Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels, the greatest WWE's greatest rivals. We have seen you. Wrong podcast.
Now, you know how original the concept "seen your video" is, Callum.
I know.
You can only hear that in one place.
Gimmick infringement. But yes, absolutely. Highly recommended. And if we ever do, when Rory runs out of Coliseum home videos, when he gets onto the Silver Vision Classics, then we're good to go. We'll get to this in about 2047 or something.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get started on those, the way things are going, and nothing else is added to the network, probably around about 2028, so personally 2046 for doing it again.
Just in time between doing us doing special relations episode number 60-something, and... you recording Survivor Series 2008 on Wrestling 20 years ago.
Yeah, can't wait for that one.
So, as we had to go, search the dust off the DVD players, get them out of their packing boxes. We'll stay with a match that you can find on the DVD set. But for anyone who's not got the DVD, you can watch along on YouTube. We're going back to March the 30th, 1991. It is the SWS versus WWF WrestleFest in the Tokyo Dome. So 1991, you may have guessed, it's the Hart Foundation against the Rockers. My first choice was going to be the ladder match, and then I was reminded that Ben and Rory have covered that on Senior Video episode number 2. Did listen, you bastard.
Oh, yeah.
episode number 2 in the Place to Be Nation archives. After that, it was going to be a Madison Square Garden show that's not on the WWE Network. And then I found this. I wanted sort of a match that the two of them were in. So this number 2, gents, I've got the YouTube version up on the screen, so could you tell me, either of you tell me what match number it is on disc number 2 of the DVD set?
Match number three.
So match number 3, I am on, it is an OSW review video. I am currently at 10 minutes and 16 seconds where the Rockers are coming out. Gents, where does the match start on the DVD?
On the DVD, I've just pressed play and pause. I've got a shot of the arena and subtitles saying SWS and WWE.
Yes,
so I'm just going to press play.
And I don't know if Rory's the same, but all the matches have got their own individual chapters, so there's no where you can just start it.
I love the translate. How are you, wrestling fans? Is what it now currently says on my screen.
Have we pressed play?
I've got that.
I'm just trying to catch up with you. Oh, okay. Right, so...
I've got it at the bottom of my... I'm literally 3 seconds in, and I have got WrestleFest and Tokyo Dome at the bottom.
Okay, I'll hop back to that. And then we can start afresh with everybody together.
And I'm same as Callum. I've got the shot of the arena with the crowd. Quite a nice stadium as well.
Oh, yeah, that's me. So on the YouTube, the OSW YouTube, OSW Review 98, it seems very strange plugging a different podcast, but it is. this is where we are. OSW Review 98, the watch along, it is 9 minutes and 39 seconds. I am at, if you want to watch along on YouTube, or match number 3, if you like the boys and you're watching it on the DVD extra. But now we're all in the same place. It is up to me now to count us in. So we'll go on 3, 2, 1, play.
Oh yeah, I've just got that. How are you, wrestling fans?
I love it. That's brilliant.
Now, I hate to say this, guys, but I've noticed there are a lot of empty seats in the Tokyo Dome there. They clearly, this WWF product in 91 has not hit to Japan.
Well, this is right after WrestleMania 7.
Yes. Because the Hulk Van Ocean, why the Hulk Van Ocean even tagging up? Yeah, that's a good point.
So they must have gone right out there. Because, of course, if you watch WrestleMania 7, you will be very aware that Bobby Heenan talks about the after-show party once or twice during the broadcast itself. Mm. That probably lasted a fair while.
Very swank jackets on the Rockers, by the way.
Absolutely. I think that's what we should wear to AEW at Craven Cottage.
I mean, it's quite crazy. This is this being the second anniversary show.
We've done
humble
well.
Beginnings.
I know, right? We've lived through a pandemic.
Oh, fucking hell. It is quite the thing to think about. How so? We start. So it will obviously be November 2019.
Yeah.
It didn't seem that close. Well, to me anyway, it didn't seem that close to when it all started and we started getting into lockdown and all that. And here we are 2 years later.
Mm. Yeah. Well, lockdown would have been March, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just before WrestleMania. Yeah.
Yep.
Big flow.
We recorded our WrestleMania preview show.
Yes.
Before lockdown.
We did.
With Jenny.
Yeah. We have been very lucky with our guests, by the way. We've picked well.
So, bit of trivia, gents. Episode number one was released the 23rd of November 2019. What was the first match that we ever live watched on Special Relations?
Well, I know this because I picked it.
Okay, Rory.
It was the Fall Brawl 94 War Games match.
Yes. We started as we meant to go on and just talked about Kyle Robert Parker's penis all match.
Well, it's like a prominent topic in more ways than one.
It was all match, but do you remember what the topic of conversation turned into after the match finished?
Was it something to do with him shitting his pants?
It was the fact that he shot himself, yes.
I mean, going back to that time, it's kind of crazy to think, like, you know, I think we've told the story on air before. So I was the third member of the group to join the wild chat party and all that, and it was our good friend Scott Criscola who said, you guys would do all right at a podcast if you wanted to. That was his exact words. And I think was it Rory or it definitely wasn't me. Was it Rory or Callum that said, let's do it then?
I had originally gone to JT and said, if you want, I can chat to the boys and see if you wanted to do something. And he's like, aye, go for it. So I think I had got a slot on the a slot on the feed before I'd even asked to do if you wanted to do it with me.
Yeah, you got the N. Yeah, because we didn't even talk, like, you know, person to person, well, you know, like actually talking to somebody vocally until literally the phone call.
Oh, 5 minutes, yeah. 5 minutes before we went, before we started recording.
Yep, first time.
You know, we probably talked every day, like, you know, on Messenger and all that kind of bollocks. Yes. But, like, actually talking, and, you know, I say talking in person, it wasn't talking in person, but, you know, actually vocalising.
I'm still waiting on Scott to drop the bombshell that he said that you guys should start a podcast because, as a way of saying, take your shite chat out of this chat and do it amongst yourselves, and then we'll put it on and maybe people will listen to it.
That was my memory. It was Scott first, then JT, and then like Jenny Smith and Tim Capel said, do it. You should do it. And we were like, oh, I don't know. I don't think it was a case. I know we're not paying any attention to this match, but I don't think it was a case of me. How can I put it? I am watching it, but we haven't actually spoke about it yet. It wasn't a case of me like not wanting to do the pod. It was more a case of, would anybody actually listen? Yeah, I was all right doing a pod, but it was like the first podcast I'd ever done of any kind. But I was like, would anybody actually be interested in this?
Well, I think by the time that we started, I think all three of us were podcast novices. Oh, no, wait. That's why we got a podcast. That's why we got a podcast.
Just checking I was listening, weren't you? Yeah.
But we have to get we have to have a legend with us to hold a hand.
Big Flo.
That was nice. That was nice right there from the Rockers, by the way. That's
This match has been pretty nifty, although I don't remember what we watched on one of the senior videos, the Warrior DiBiase from the Tokyo Dome the year before. You just wonder what the Japanese fans would have made of this. Although I think this is probably a bit more up their alley than DiBiase against the Ultimate Warrior.
I think so.
God, that match was bizarre.
So, it's
quite crazy. It's quite crazy to think at this point, like, this is pretty much, you know, the last Hart Foundation match, and it's, you know, the last year of the Rockers.
Is this the last Hart Foundation match? It's got to be very close to it, right?
That's what I mean. I'm paraphrasing, you know, without looking on, you know, without looking. It's got to be down there.
It's that match with the Legion of Doom that aired on a Coliseum video that I'll get to at some point, no doubt. Yes. But that was recorded shortly before WrestleMania 7.
Right.
This is live at Tokyo Dome on March the 30th. I mean, Brett's in singles.
You're not a kick in the ass off it, Ben. So after this one, they go on the European tour. They tag three times on the European tour. They then have a match with the Nasty Boys on MSG. On the first of July, and then that's the last time that Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart are in the same match until Raw is War 2016, 30th of June 97 in a dark match. The next time they would tag on television is Canadian Stampede.
Wow, my goodness.
So they have two televised matches left. One in Madison Square Garden in July and Canadian Stampede.
And as always, I feel like we're also underselling the power of the Rockers' mullets during this period. That is magnificent. That is true, like party at the back material. I mean, look at that. That headlock, that bear hug's giving it all away.
In matches in the WWE, this kind of bear hug is... it's a common sight, right, Saito-san? Indeed, it's a very effective move after all. the commentary is hypnotic. It's a sign that the wrestler is big and strong. He's giving up on the physical confrontation. Uh-oh, he's out of the ring. That role wasn't intentional. And they say Saito, that in Japan, they don't pay to treat wrestling like a legitimate sport.
Saito-san is, you know, a living embodiment of Lord Alfred.
I love that big flow on the apron there. That's pretty fantastic.
Bam, bam, bigger flow.
That's what it's referring to. Yeah, this match is excellent. Wrestling with a lot of freedom in this match.
Yeah.
As well they might.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a benefit of not being fully under Vince's control. And they're just a different audience. I think they can...
God, there are a lot of empty seats there, aren't they? Down there.
Yeah,
you're right.
According to tactics
on both sides.
According to our good friends at Cage Match, there was an audience of 36,000. They must have just opened up the very back.
As I said, they've not done the WWE trick of, like, you know, just filling up the lower part of the arena.
36,000, oh my goodness.
The old Arsenal thing. The attendance today is 67,000 tickets sold. There's about three men he's dug there.
Okay, so here's a question, right? So Jim Neidhart gets a lot of flack, doesn't he? But it's not all of Brett, is it, the Hart Foundation and how good they are? Neidhart's going to take some credit for it.
Oh, I think so. I think that. He more than holds up his end of the bargain.
Sean's doing some great selling here, by the way.
Yeah, he's drawing every golden drop out of that headlock.
back to special relations history. March 28th, 2020, dropped Special Relations number 5, regularly scheduled programming. Including this episode, the boys came up with a current day WWE football team, picking out our favourite DVD sets. And the debut of The Happy Place featuring a Mandy Rose lookalike you would not believe. Gents, who was the Mandy Rose lookalike?
Oh, it was a bloke, was it? Oh, who was it?
I really can't remember that.
Please tell me you know the answer, Callum. That's going to be.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, I remember the other two things distinctly, but that, no, go on.
It was Brian Knobbs.
That was it, yes. Yeah, because we watched the Nasty Boys versus Jack and Kevin Sullivan.
Sullivan, yeah. And I think we were talking about.
Wasn't it just after Mandy had fell over at WrestleMania, and that's how we got on the subject?
No, it was because we thought we compared Kevin Sullivan to Otis, and then Brian Knobbs came running at him because he had blonde hair. I said, "Oh, there's Mandy Rose."
Okay. Oh my word!
I mean, that's just a reminder of a great storyline that was ruined by COVID. See, that was a point I did care about WWE. They got me to care about Mandy Rose and Otis, goddammit.
NXT Women's Champion Mandy Rose, I'll have you know.
Absolutely.
Toxic attraction. That is such a Vince McMahon, how are we doing cool kids name, isn't it? that is so Vince McMahon late 2021.
Britney Spears has brought out this new song, Toxic.
Makes no sense, but it sounds rad. Yes, exactly.
And I will also say as well, and Callum will probably know this better than me because he watches a lot of more UK wrestling as me, Kylie Rae's a babyface. What?
I can't stand her, personally. May 9th, 2020, Special Relations number 7. We discussed, that was the one that Sean was on, discussed his favourite mafia references, because of his movies, two of his movies were gangster films.
Was it a couple of light murders or whatever it was?
He came up with a quote that became the tagline for the show. What was said tagline?
Oh my God, I didn't realise we were going to go mastermind.
He's testing us out, isn't he? I thought it was something like a couple of light murders or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's something like that.
Special Relations number 7 tagline was some really good murders.
That was it. Yeah, because one of the films was Goodfellas, and I want to say, did he pick Godfather? I know you did, Callum, but did he pick Godfather as well?
If I come up with the bloody taglines, I should get these. Oh my. Now you know who to blame.
Yeah, I only write these bits. I should know this as well.
This isn't back to the match quickly. This isn't to damn him with faint praise, but Jeanette used a great hot tag.
Oh yeah. And speaking of Sean, he picked that Bret Hart Ricky Steamboat match from 1987 for us to watch.
1986.
Was it 86? I think. Oh,
no, sorry. Bret Hart, Randy Savage.
Savage Hart.
That was it.
I watched Bret Steamboat with him for senior video. Yeah, we watched Bret Savage from Saturday night's main event.
Apologies, Sean. Apologies.
God. I love how Bret kicks out of Sunset Flips as well. Mm. Such a minor point. It's just the fundamentals, the man.
Yeah, just the kick into the face
every,
as well.
Every single time. Just everything Bret Hart does in the ring, attack or offense. Defense or defense, I said it twice. It's just, it happens for a reason.
Look at that. Look at Sean in the background as well, still selling things.
The original recording of the remainder of this match has deteriorated. We've got slightly liney graphics now.
Yeah, it's a bit like what happened when I switched from British internet to my phone.
In a visual, go on, Callum, test us out again. Go on.
All right. I'm
inexplicably enjoying this.
October 24th, 2020, we released Special Relations number 12, On the Lash with the Ledges. That was the one that Tim was on. What was different to that one, to that recording, than any other special relations we've done in the other 23?
I think
that's because, due to wrestling 20 years ago requirements, we had to record part two with the live watch first.
We did. It was the only one we've ever recorded out of sequence, and it's the only one we've ever recorded with it. Part of it has only got two of us on it.
Yeah, because we did. Because we do like segments one and three first, and then like Rory had to go away.
We did the Happy Place and the live watch, and then Rory went. Part one and part three, and then part two was just me and you, Ben, with Tim.
Yeah.
So it's the only.
We did that because.
You were doing.
I didn't want to be accused of running away from an NXT match live week. As it turns out, he went for Brock versus Cena from Extreme.
I was going to say he did.
Oh,
there's
a three count.
NXT.
The ref counted the three. Yes, he did.
Wow,
it was so tight on the cover there.
Now that's surprising.
I don't remember the one in this match, but there you are. I don't remember very much, but wow, getting a victory at this point of their career.
That's what I mean. That was a really good match.
That was a great match.
I enjoyed
it. I also recommend the match from MSG, which is the first match on this set as well.
Callum, have you got any more questions for us? Let's get them out the way because we'll be going soon.
Yes, right. Okay. So, episode number 12 was the only show that we're part of it. All three of us went on. if that makes sense. Special Relations number 13, dinner, was the anniversary show last year. What show did we watch?
That was Rory's first NXT TakeOver experience, I think.
And that we was watched a year ago. Bloody hell.
And we watched Our Evolution, which is still great.
That was a very good event indeed, I'll gladly say. That was a year ago we did that. Fucking hellfire. Wow, that doesn't seem like anyone close to a year.
Bit of crazy amazing time, my friend.
That feels like 3 months ago, max. That's a fucking year, extraordinary. I sat in this very spot right here where I was. That's amazing.
Well, I'm in the same spot, to be fair.
When did we do Clash of the Champions, June 93?
Clash of the Champions was...
I can't quite remember what number it was. 22, 23?
Yeah, it was. I think it was 23. I'll tell the backstory.
The one with Flair and Arn versus the Hollywood Blondes. That one.
We were all on Body Press Your Look, and the reward for the person who got the highest score was that they could pick the match.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And we all know who that was. Well, given our performance with this questions, Ben, you know, it all makes sense, doesn't it?
And to peel the curtain back slightly, that I'm sure you two can remember, I can't remember what it was we picked. We picked something else first, and we were like, no, that's actually really boring and really shit. Let's go for that instead. But we did that off air.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember that.
It was going to be another Clash. It was going to be another Clash of the Champions. I wanted to watch it. I think we were going to pick the Clash of the Champions because it was GWCW time.
Yes, yeah. It was a list, if I remember right, if I've got the story right, Callum had a list of about six Clutch of the Champions to watch and picked one of them randomly, and the one that he picked, we all sat there and looked at the list and we thought, no, that's not going to be a good use of time.
When would you think it was? Given we're on episode number 24 today.
Summer of 2000, episode...
Yeah, summer of 2020.
10, 11.
Episode number 8. Anything but nondescript.
Yeah.
Second part of the show, we are watching a classic clash as a result of Cal winning a private wager over a respective performance on Body Pressure. Look, Steve Regal and Barry Windham fans, this is a live watch for you.
Yes, because we love that Windham Scorpio match, yes.
Made my list because of it. And quite high as well.
It made mine as well.
Bloody good match that was, yeah.
There was also a cracking six-man tag, and Steve Regal had a good match. I can't remember who he had a good match with.
Was it Regal? I was thinking Regal Simmons for some reason.
Simmons was against...
Was he not in the six-man?
Dick Slater?
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
How are we?
I'm hopping over to the network as we speak, so I'm going to see if I can see it.
Very good show. So if you want to listen to our thoughts on it as you watch it, episode number 8 of the Special Relations. Ron Simmons, Dick Slater, Vigo against Bagwell, Wyndham against Scorpio.
Yeah.
Big Van Vader, Sid Vicious and Rick Rude versus Dustin Rhodes, Sting and Davey Boy Smith. And then the Horsemen against the Hollywood Blondes.
That's a great show.
And of course, if you want to hear one man going absolutely mad during a podcast, you've got the 3-part GWWE reveal. Just as Rory going absolutely postal on us. That was good fun.
Do
you remember that went 10 hours? I don't know if you've mentioned it.
It certainly did.
10 hours. Well, you should mention that more often, really.
I think so.
So,
Special Relations number 18. We started off this one with a very serious chat. Special Relations number 18 from April 24th of this year started off with a half out of 40-minute chat
on
a serious topic. Yeah. So, what would that serious topic have been?
European Super League.
It certainly was.
Yeah, yes.
We got a lot of feedback from that one.
We did. I'm just trying to see. I think the one before that, Special Relations number 17, 6 a.m. Twitches, was was the debut of Interview Review. What was the first one we did?
Sasha Banks.
I think it was a Stone Cold one because we did mind that avenue for a while.
Then we did the Jericho one the next month.
Yes.
We did Sasha, then we did Stephanie, and then Chris Jericho going on the broken
session. Yes. We did do so, that's correct. Yeah. I thought that was after. Okay, no. No, that would have been before because that's the reason. Yeah.
Because we were going to do Jimmy Hart and then we didn't. Because was it a week before we were due to record, they did the Jericho one dropped.
Yeah, and we thought, well, we've got to do that.
Didn't we do the Jimmy Hart one eventually? Because I'm sure I've watched that.
Oh, yeah, we did it.
I
love the fact that I'm you know, one third of this podcast and I've got practically no memory.
June 26th of this year, Special Relations number 20, technical problems, very technical problems. We live watched two things that night. One of them was Tommy End or Aleister Black against, I believe, was it Johnny Gargano?
Yes.
But what was the other thing we live watched that night?
Oh, God. Was that the night we were watching Portugal and Germany?
It was absolutely the night we started. Yes.
Oh, well played.
Or Portugal France, it might have been. I know Portugal was one of the teams.
Portugal, France, and
Germany, Hungary.
Germany, Hungary.
That was it. I knew Germany were in there somewhere.
August of this year, C-bomb shelter.
when we just all said.
Always got the doors open for that one.
I was just thinking it started, but it's when Rory drops the C-bomb, that's when you know it's going to be a good night. And we just kept doing it.
I think this one's been C-bomb free, though, hasn't it?
It has been.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to go there.
I won't see it.
Couple of minutes to go.
I won't see it.
The word couple is, that'll do. But no, in all seriousness, it's been a great 2 years. Thanks everybody for having us, and thank you to you two. I'll say that on air now.
Aww.
You know, I don't get too mollycolly every. So when I do, you know, I mean it.
Thank you too, gents, because we're looking back on some of these episodes. We have said some really really memorable. Moment, well, certainly for me anyway. It's
maybe not for Ben.
No,
I honestly think I'd get a lot of half points in a quiz. You know, a lot of half points, and I remember half details. I'm like Shawn Michaels.
Who's your co-host on the special editions? Rory and the Scottish one.
Yeah, the one who talks with a funny accent. Yeah.
Point and a half.
I have been proper in touch with my feelings tonight. I've just realised that.
You have been. Two years of excellent podcasting. Excellent.
Whenever
excellent.
Anybody asks me about this podcast, I sum it up in two words: random bollocks.
Yeah.
And I see no reason to change that description right now. And I mean it with all the love and affection I can possibly muster.
I know we've been serious tonight, so this is slightly going to be contradicting what I'm going to say, but there are far too many serious podcasts out there. You just want to tune in and I can't remember who said it, it might have been Badil and Skinner when they talk about fantasy football. It's just like you're down with your mates, talking about football in the pub. All I ever wanted this show to be is a couple of lads in the pub talking about wrestling and what other random stuff came from, or tangents, because we love the tangents, whatever the other tangents came out from that topic. And I think we achieve it.
We do. I think, and looking back on some of these, I'm on the archive just now. In two years, we've gone from Colonel Robert Parker shitting himself and being able to touch the bottom of a pint glass to talking for 40 minutes about how crap the WWE is and everything in between. There's never been a dull moment. So I thank you both for that. And we're saying this as if it's going to be the last ever episode. We are coming back next month. Please don't worry about that.
Despite what we've said in the first part, there's still enough things that we love and we're sticking around. And as sure as you know, night follows day, as most of our listeners and our regular listeners will know, our December show is our office Christmas party. So we're fully on board for that.
Absolutely. We might be down on it, but there's always, you know, there's GCW. There's still time. We've got all next year, Ben, to try and get Rory into deathmatch wrestling. So that's it next year.
That's the next task, is it?
next year's
almost,
anniversary.
Almost dead is going to be the epithet for next year.
Year's anniversary, we're making Rory watch a tournament of death or something.
I feel like I'm into it.
So time
to wrap. I think it's going to be bedtime.
Thank you both again for the last 2 years and for tonight. Thank you everyone who's taken the time to listen over the last 2 years and again tonight. Thank you especially to Kevin Pressman, who has given us some great memories over the years. That's probably more Johnny Rep. It's probably got a mention at some point. Oh, Johan Niskins. Alan Ruff.
Your man, the Scottish right back.
Oh, fucking Stephen O'Donnell, Ricardo Fuller, to a man, he who shall not be named, that's now the Manchester City number 10.
Still got great hair though.
There is that. I always preferred Ben to an Aston Villa player. Always preferred John McGinn. McGinniesta, of course. Tangents, what we like. So thanks to everyone. Again, seriously, thank you to everyone who's taken the time to listen over the last 2 years. And again, tonight, we will be back next month. This is not the end. This is just the beginning. But we will see you for the office Christmas party next time. And as I forgot to say at the start, I hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving, and we'll see you in the summer.
Inside, I want you, just hold me. I can't believe that this week's just me, nothing at all. You just said thanks.